You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Sorry, no John and Gordy this morning. I'm Matt Rothschild. You got Angela Lang and Matt Rothschild with you this morning instead of John and Gordy. But we've been having fun on this show on WMDX 92.7. And you can join the conversation anytime you like. Call or text 608-879-8255. It looks pretty clear out this morning, and it's going to be 44 and sunny by 3 o'clock. Tomorrow, 40. Christmas, 37, not 49, like we were told a couple days ago. So we may have a few bits of snow for a semi-white or gray Christmas, but we'll just have to see how much melts in the next 48 hours. Right now, I'm thrilled to have on the show with us a special guest, Dane County Circuit Court Judge Everett Mitchell. Welcome to the program, Judge.
Good morning. Good to be with you, Matt. Good to be with you, Angela.
Well, it's great to have you. And, you know, I was at the All Kings rally in October here in Madison at the square, walking around with friends, protesting with tens of thousands of people. And all of a sudden, a voice came on that captivated the whole crowd. The best speech of the day was by none other than Circuit Court Judge Everett Mitchell. We're going to hear 1 minute of it, Judge, if you can bear with us.
Oh, man.
That was Fight for Justice. That was Judge Everett Mitchell in October at the No Kings rally here in downtown Madison. If you love that speech, you can show your appreciation by calling right now at 608-879-8255 or send us a text. Judge Mitchell, why was it important for you to not only attend that rally, but to speak to that rally? And you said at the very beginning, I may get in trouble on Monday when I go back to work, but I'm going to be here. Judges show up too. Why was it so important for you to be there? And thanks again for the tremendous speech.
I think, you know, my colleague Hannah Dugan has been, her case has been on the news, national news, because of the actions that she had demonstrated within her court and somewhat outside of her court. And it really showed that, you know, while judges believe that they are a third branch of the government that is in certain ways immune from the attacks of any kind of administration, it showed that that's not the case. And the blending of the roles really requires us to not just use our voices for what happens within our courtroom or as we look at statutes, but really to look at our judicial code and say, hey, man, we have to be there to protect not only the freedoms of people, but also the constitutionality that people need. They need an impartial jurist that puts a check to the legislative as well as the executive branches. And we have to use our voices to be able to do so. And that was important to me to be a part of that conversation. It was important for me to demonstrate that all people need to be a part of these conversations to fight for what is right on behalf of everyday people. And it's not political for me. It's not partisan for me. It is everyday people are struggling. And how do we make sure that no kings ever get established regardless of the party, and that everyday people are given an opportunity and a chance to be strong, to be powerful, to be heard, to be recognized regardless of their status in this world. So I'm just a judge. I'm just a black man. I'm just a dad, just, you know, pastor. And I needed to be there like everybody else.
Judge Mitchell, you mentioned Hannah Dugan. What was your reaction to her prosecution and to the verdict?
My heart sank, because Judge Dugan is probably one of the, and I say this not to be patriarchal in a man in a man's voice, but she is one of the most humble, kind, conscientious, thoughtful, smart, creative human beings that I have ever met. We were elected in the same year. And to see, you know, her in many ways used as a tool, a political tool to incite fear into a judiciary that is got to be made to believe that they have to be in compliance with, you know, any kind of administration, I mean, it shakes the core of my being. And so I wish people got a chance to just not know her, but she has been treated like a spectacle, a rag doll to be pulled in and out of people's, you know, streams and interviews as though she is not doing a job that she felt compelled to be able to do. And I think, I just think that it's just been heartbreaking for me to see her go through that and to see the legal system in many ways turn itself into what Black men often experience from the legal justice system, really, right? This idea that it's not fair, it's already prescribed, it's already using the vast resources against. And to people who don't think that this is should be afraid, I was like, if a kind, thoughtful white woman can be, and the justice system can be used against her, I don't think anybody's safe.
And that's what I was going to ask is, how do you feel, because you're outspoken, you're also a Black man doing what some people call radical things. I think it's basic common decency and humanity. Do you worry about yourself or other judges?
I mean, I've always worried about myself. And so you have to be strategic, you know, about how you use your voice. You have to be very strategic about the places where you speak and how you speak and what you say and what you do. Because I've had a lot of people attack me on, you know, who you stand with, who you support, why you do that, why, you know. So none of that should impact your ability to be a judge. But the judicial code doesn't, it really does say we have to be out in the community. Our judicial code demands that we're out in the community. And so a lot of times the work that I do is really work about being involved in the community and really exercising that element of the judicial code and just staying away from direct partisan stuff. But anything else that deals with justice, fairness, equality, hope, love, I mean, we're supposed to be there. We are the representatives of that constitutional framework. And so to not be there is to leave a void. And a lot of judges and lawyers are just introverts, and they feel more comfortable with their books and, you know, and being in their offices and writing decisions than they do being in front of a crowd of people. And I'm an introvert too, but I just have these extrovert gifts. And so I like to be able to be out with people, because at the end of the day, it's when you're with the people that you feel, that you recognize that you can only truly do justice.
And we appreciate those gifts, Judge Mitchell. I'm wondering what the policy is at the circuit court. If ICE here in Madison comes in your hallway or wants to come in your courtroom and you got a defendant there, what power do you have to tell them, look, this is a courtroom, I'm in charge of this courtroom, get out? Can you do that?
Yeah, you have power in your courtroom. I think that's undeniable. So they can't come into our courtroom, just like anybody else can't just come into your courtroom and to exercise their duty. I think, you know, they treated Judge Dugan a little differently because they tried to say, well, she extended it beyond a courtroom. Right. So she was in hallways and engaging, you know, so they use that to try to say she's obstructing. But now we have the power in our courtrooms to say, no, we're not going to treat. And I don't use the word defendants. I always, you know, they either participants or it's Mr., Mrs., or whatever pronouns they choose to use, because I use those terms. Like defendants to me is like a holdover from some old racist patriarchal times that diminish human beings in order to elevate the individuals who have power over them. So I try to still maintain people's humanity, even especially if they have not been convicted of a crime yet in my courtroom.
And what is the prospect that Judge Adelman, who's presiding over Judge Dugan's case, might throw the case out still or throw the verdict out? Is that still a possibility, do you think?
I mean, there's always a possibility. I mean,
I was surprised. He's a very liberal judge. I was surprised he didn't bite on some of the motions from Judge Dugan's lawyers to to throw the thing out before it went to trial. Were you surprised by that?
No, no. I mean, there are a lot of motions before trial. And as a judge, you want to be very careful about the, you know, dismissing before you have an opportunity to really hear the evidence. It's very difficult to some motions to grant because you really don't know. You don't know what's going to be offered as proof. You don't know what's going to really be submitted. And so if you do something that's ahead of time, you really are setting yourself up for an appeal because you really didn't give a chance to put people under oath and see what the state can actually prove in this process.
No, I know some of the jurors have come out and said they, you know, they didn't feel good about the verdict, but they were sticking to what they were told in court. But jurors have the power or the authority to say, you know, we don't want to convict no matter what you told us, judge, or no matter what the facts of the case are. I wonder whether I wasn't in the courtroom. I don't know if the defense attorneys gave that kind of a spiel to the jurors, but I would have hoped that some of the jurors would have said that.
I'm almost certain that everybody, you know, every defense team will highlight, you know, that the state did not prove its burden, you know. And so, I mean, but depending on the jury instructions, the jury can be bound by the limitation of those instructions. And so while it's not as sexy as Law and Order, you know, Crime Victim Unit, sometimes the real life jury stuff is not, you know, especially an obstruction charge, it's probably not as highly controversial in terms of jury instructions as we might think.
You know, I want to switch gears now and talk about something that you were in the news about last week, which was there was this press conference with you and Dane County Exec Melissa Agard talking about a new juvenile justice program that's just being launched. Give us a little introduction to that, and then we'll come back after the break. What is this program about?
Yeah, so we're launching the ATTA program, which stands ATTA, A-T-T-A, which stands for Assessment, Treatment, Transition, and Aftercare. So it is really a program designed to bring a lot of our young people back to Dane County and to offer them those four areas of assessment, treatment, transition, and then aftercare program in Dane County. Generally, these would be young people who would meet the statutory definitions to be up at Lincoln Hills, but we're choosing to create this program to keep them close to their families, to community-based resources, educational pathways. And so that's the program that we just launched last week.
Melissa Agard said the program was developed at the request of Judge Everett Mitchell. He's our guest right now on the John and Gordy Show. I'm Matt Rothschild with my co-host Angela Lang, and we'll talk a little bit more about that program right here on 92.7 WMDX. When we come back, you can join the conversation, 608-879-8255. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back to the John and Gordy in the Morning Show. I'm Matt Rothschild, subbing in for John and Gordy along with Angela Lang. And one of the leaders here in Madtown is none other than Judge Everett Mitchell. He has been, for the last 6 years, working on this idea to try to reform juvenile justice here in Dane County. And Judge Mitchell, why don't you talk a little bit more about that? I know you mentioned Lincoln Hills. Lincoln Hills is a disastrous place by all accounts. I haven't been there. You've been there. What was it like when you visited there?
I gave Angela an opportunity to read a book that I'm putting together called The Art of Justice. And one of the things that really has shaped my philosophy as a judge was that first visit to Lincoln Hills when I was elected back in 2016. And just to see how the young people were being treated at that time related to the like their mental health, even just the idea like they weren't even getting haircuts and or they had a dog groomer making, you know, cutting some of the black boys' hair. And then just the sound of that, the ways in which they went for solitary confinement, or they called it residential housing at the time, made me realize like we got to do better. Like this is, how can you expect these young people to come back into the community largely most of them from Milwaukee area, and be able to come back into the community and actually contribute when this is the treatment that they are being served with at the time. Now, they made some changes, obviously, because of the lawsuit, but it still feels incomplete to me when it comes to how we want these young people to actually address the underlying trauma and recognize that a lot of these young people are victims themselves. And I think in this era of this holdover era of the super predator idea, we have allowed for that consciousness to still, you know, seep into the very mindsets of people that don't realize like these are babies, like these are children. And they don't wake up just learning to steal cars or selling drugs, rob people. Like there is something that is being taught to them so that they are engaging in these kind of behaviors. So creating something, right, that was in the back of my mind was like, we have to create a different model because this is not sustainable. And for people who think that, well, what about, you know, was it race? I said, well, just look at the latest thing that happened in Racine when that young boy was just beat and pummeled by five grown men. And they were on camera. And they still beat this boy. And that, I mean, I cried with the mother to see, like, these are children that we put in places that are supposed to help them, and they create more trauma, more pain. So we have to have a different way. We have to at least try to keep our babies close and not give people permission to dismiss, to for us to pay, and then they still beat our children unmercifully.
So you mentioned, okay, so you brought up the book. I wasn't going to, because I know if it was a secret or anything, but I read the pages that you sent, and while I was overwhelmingly inspired by your views of it, I'll admit I was very angry. Angry in the fact of this was the first time I read a judge, a Black man, talking about the humanity of these children. And I was so angry that I felt like it was you for the first time to name these things. Can you kind of talk about why this was like long overdue? And while I'm grateful that you are the one kind of spearheading and talking and uplifting these issues, I'm curious kind of like your thought pattern of what it means to finally get some attention on these matters, and knowing that you're the one to have to do it after years long issues at places like Lincoln Hills.
I think the issue, the thing that you hit on the nail is like, you know, how is it that I'm one that's articulating this, right? How is it that I'm at the place where we've been having this stuff for a long time? Why am I the one? Primarily, it's the way that the system is run. So generally, judges have only in the rotation for a very short period of time when it comes to children and child welfare. In Milwaukee, I think they rotate out every year, or maybe every, at the most 2 years. So before any judge has a competency in the area of what of child welfare or juvenile delinquency, they're already another rotation. And then a new person comes in, and the people who behold the system or who actually run the system, you know that. And they know they can wait out the judge. I have just been lucky in the sense that my rotation has, I've been in it for almost 10 years. So because of that 10 years, that's a decade of just looking and paying attention and modifying and adjusting the system. So now I have such awareness of what's supposed to happen that I can now say, oh, no, no, I'm the buffer between what you're trying to do and what the best interests of these children really are. And that makes a huge difference. That knowledge base makes a huge difference. And so I'm probably one of the few that has in our state that really has had the privilege of serving families for such a long period of time and giving them an opportunity to really redefine the process that we have for them. Matt seems like he's itching to get in.
Yeah, I am. A lot of judges aren't buffers. Like you are. And am I hearing you right? You have a book coming out. Is it available yet? What's up with that?
No, I'm putting the finishing touches on it now. So no, it's not. But yeah, I had to write it because it was part of the, as Angela said, you know, I'm seeing all this stuff and majority of people never get a chance to see what happens behind the veil.
Well, when that book comes out, we'll have you on again. I hope to have you on before then too. Judge Everett Mitchell, a great public servant here in Madison, Wisconsin. You're listening to the John and Gordy in the Morning Show. I'm Matt Rothschild, along with my guest host, Angela Lang. We'll be right back. We've got CJ who wants to join the conversation. Good morning, Matt Rothschild here. Angela Lang and I are subbing in for John and Gordy. He'll be on this afternoon from 2 to 5 all across the Civic Media Radio Network. And they'll be here tomorrow morning at their usual spot behind this microphone. Boy, what an inspiration that Everett Mitchell was. And is.
This is why I love that man dearly. Yes, Block and I endorsed him for Supreme Court in the primary in 2023. And I still have his yard sign. We created yard signs. I still have his yard sign taped to my door because he is one of the people that I think actually sees the real humanity in folks. And I think it's so powerful in the position that he's in. You know, he was telling me about his like No King speech and he was like, I don't know. Like some people thought it might be risky, but he is so moved by his own level of humanity and compassion for others that I really do think that he's a gem in this state. And, you know, he's heard me say this before, would love to see him at some point being the first Black elected state Supreme Court justice in Wisconsin.
Yeah, that would be a wonderful sight for sure. And that speech at the No Kings rally, I mean, so many people were so inspired by that speech and told me afterwards how great it was. And you could hear even in that snippet that Dom played for us a few minutes ago, just how appreciative the crowd was and into it the crowd was. So that was great. The weather today, it's about 35 and pretty clear here in Madison. It's supposed to peak out at 44 and sunny by 3 o'clock this afternoon. Tomorrow's gonna be 39 or 40, 37 on Christmas. Some melting, maybe all the snow will melt, who knows. You can join the conversation. I'm sorry, what did you say, Angela?
I was like, that'd be nice. Get all the snow gone and then we could just start over.
Yeah.
With fresh snow.
I mean, we had late December and early December. So maybe we'll get early December now and late December. And then we can have a real Madison January. The number to call here, 608-879-8255. That's 8879-8255. And we have a caller, who calls often. CJ is a conservative, but I'd like to hear what CJ has to say sometime and just try to have a conversation with CJ for a couple minutes. CJ, what's on your mind?
Thanks for taking my call, Matt and Angela. Merry Christmas to you both.
And to you. I hear you're a snowbird. I hear you're down in Florida.
I am a snowbird. I'm calling you from Florida, Matt.
Whereabouts in Florida are you, CJ?
Actually, between Naples and Fort Myers, Bonita Springs.
Oh, that's a pretty place.
Well, I'm very blessed, yes.
What's the weather there right now?
Right now, it's, I'd say, like 69, just about breaking 70, sunrise, beautiful.
You're killing me, absolutely killing me here.
I know, every day I appreciate it. I'm blessed every day to get up and spend time with my lovely. So, but thank you for taking my call, Matt. I look forward to having lunch with you again sometime.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, we had lunch together in Middleton anytime, man.
Join us because we it was a very civil conversation, and but I appreciate taking my call, Judge Mitchell. You know, listening to him, regardless how we got there, it scares me because to hear him talk about Judge Dugan, who we saw on video what she did. She took a convicted criminal and snuck him out the side door from federal agents. She should be held accountable. And his support of her scares me because that's the definition of an activist judge. And that's what we're facing now. People want, I would accuse a lot of people on the left that don't want actual statute enforcement. They want modification on what they believe. And Judge Dugan did that.
Okay,
and
CJ.
Her personal opinions got into it.
Appreciate the call, CJ. I just want an opportunity to respond. I want to hear what Angela has to say about your comment, too. But I appreciate you calling and look forward to hearing your voice again. And, yeah, we'll have that lunch in Middleton again when you're back from Florida, which I'm envious of. Look, activist judges, you know, the U.S. Supreme Court is the biggest example of an activist judge, of activist judges that I can imagine, where they're just overturning things left and right and granting Donald Trump, you know, blanket immunity for anything he wants to do, which isn't part of our constitutional system. On Judge Dugan, look, she saw what ICE was doing in her community. She saw ICE in the hallways right outside her door. She had someone in her courtroom that she was presiding over who she wanted to give a fair shake to. That's what judges are supposed to do. If they wanted to get her on this technicality, you know, the facts that came out in the court case, I don't know, the jury said the facts led them to that verdict. I believe in juries, but I wish they had come to a different determination, because as Judge Everett Mitchell was saying, she was used as a pawn by the Trump administration to demonstrate that they can reach into every corner of our society and grab people who aren't just saluting and saying how high they should jump to cooperate with ICE in every maniacal thing that the Trump administration is doing as they're crushing our civil liberties here in this country. So I wish the jury had come out with a different verdict on that. I wish Judge Adelman had dismissed the case. But Angela, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I appreciate CJ for the call and always calling in and kind of like pushing the conversation, right? Like, we could talk in our echo chambers, but it's always good to have differing opinions. I think for me, it's like when talking about an activist judge, especially right now, like, what is the role of judges? The role of judges are to uphold the rule of law, which our current president and his administration continuously not only violate, but like try to shred and destroy, right? And I do agree with Judge Mitchell's assessment that like Hannah has kind of been made as the scapegoat, or Judge Dugan has been made as the scapegoat. And I remember when this first incident like first kind of started, some friends and I were joking around of, you know, as with every industry, there are some varying ranges of judges, of really good ones and ones that are a little problematic. And from what I know of Judge Dugan, is that she's one of like the most innocent, sweet, almost kind of like soft spoken, very much like she sends out an email for Constitution Day, right? Like, happy Constitution Day. She's one of those. And so I find it interesting, like, why they chose her specifically, like with this narrative. Like, this was, if it didn't happen to her, it was going to definitely happen to someone else. And just almost from like a PR standpoint, right? It's like you have this woman who is so beholden to upholding the law that she is the one being scapegoated, right? She's not one of those judges that is inflammatory and is, you know, grandstanding all the time. She's one of the more quiet ones. And so I find that very interesting. But I think going back to the activist judge comment is like, what is the role of judges right now? Which is why I think this, you know, the U.S. Supreme Court is widely unpopular, because they don't think that the role of the Supreme Court is actually upholding the laws and policies of this government. And so, again, activist judges, it's like, what is their role? What are they supposed to be doing? And even if we don't like it, is it upholding the rule of law and Constitution, I think, is the question.
Yeah, we got a text from Larry from Deerfield, who really appreciated the interview we had with Judge Everett Mitchell. Always nice to hear from Larry from Deerfield as well. We have Charles on the line, and you can join the conversation, too, by calling 608-879-8255. That's 879-8255 to call or text. Charles, what's on your mind?
Hey, good morning. Good morning, guys.
Morning.
For me, is the hypocrisy for CJ to call and talk about how, well, she broke the law. If I'm correct, the guy was at the courthouse because he was in trouble, right? He did something wrong. So he went in the front door. When he finished the court hearing, as long as they didn't arrest him for the domestic abuse, I think that's what he was there for, he was coming out that same front door. So why couldn't ICE agents just sat there quietly waiting in the hallway until his court hearing was done. It was a ploy. Mm-hmm. And then for my question for CJ is, what does he think about Donald Trump never being held accountable for his crimes? He's a 34-count felon that should probably be locked up right now. What is his thought process on the criminals that he pardoned for January 6th? Those are all criminals. What does he think about the leader, the ex-leader from Honduras, who was a cocaine guy that he pardoned, or the guy Rose for fentanyl? It's the hypocrisy that bothers me from the right when we see the things that have been done wrong. The judge in New York, Cannon, that was a plot. She dismissed it. She allowed the case against Trump to drag on and drag on. And then she did what she was paid to do, and that was get rid of the cases so he would not be held accountable.
Charles from Milwaukee, thanks so much for that call.
Great points.
I mean, the hypocrisy is just so blatant here. And also,
which is how, you know, it's not about crime. It's not about crime. If it was, Donald Trump would be locked up.
And, you know, Judge Dugan, I mean, if she really, you know, if her intention was to shield this person in her courtroom, she didn't do a good job of it. I mean, they nabbed him as soon as she, you know, 5 minutes later, right there in the hallway. Right. So it's not like she, you know, sequestered him and put a cloak on him and told him to go into her car or something. So the whole thing was so petty. And it did seem like a real setup. And they just are trying to make an example of her. And it's frustrating, very frustrating to me that Judge Adelman, who is a very smart man and a very good judge, has let this go this far. I hope he finds a way, when the defense offers him a way to dismiss the case, that he can arrive at that conclusion. And I just wish the jury had not obsessed over the tiny little facts that they were presented and the instructions that they were given, and rather did something that's called jury nullification. I don't care what you told me in the courtroom. I'm not going to go along with this. This is an injustice, and I can't abide by giving ICE, you know, a victory here in this petty, vindictive little case against a decent judge down in Milwaukee here, who is a member in great standing of our community. I wish the jury, and I imagine there's some jurors who are thinking that right now today, that they could have said, look, I know this is what the prosecutors say. I know this is what the judge said. I know this is what the facts as they were presented to me. I don't know technically if she did something wrong or not, but guess what? I'm not going along with this terrible way to prosecute a decent judge who served the community so well. So that's my answer, I guess, to CJ, but I appreciate the call, CJ. And we will be back in just a second, because every time I'm on the show, anytime I get to be on Civic Media, I share some poetry and I share some bird talk. So we'll be coming back with bird talk and poetry here on 92.7 WMDX. I'm Matt Rothschild. She's Angela Lang. And we appreciate being with you this morning.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Hey, Matt Rothschild with you. Yeah, it's bird talk time, and that was Sean Michael Dargan doing that Paul Simon thing. It was a little assignment I gave him. I like what he did with it, though, so thank you. I'm Matt Rothschild. You're listening to the John and Gordy in the Morning Show. I've been co-anchoring this morning with my friend Angela Lang over at BLOC, and BLOC stands for Black Leaders Organizing for Communities. Angela, on Saturday, I did something I've only done once before, and that was to participate in the Christmas bird count that the Southern Wisconsin Bird Alliance and Audubon Society chapters around the country do every Christmas. And I wasn't the brave one who went outside, though, and walked around in the fields to look for birds. I just sat in my house.
There you go. That's the way to do it.
And looked at the bird feeders. And I was lucky, though, because we live on top of a ravine just south of Madison, and there's a stream that's fed by wells that runs all by springs. It runs in the winter. And about 8 years ago, on Christmas Day, it was about 10 below zero, and there was a Wilson snipe there. A Wilson snipe is like this huge, fat sandpiper with long legs and a super long bill. And I hadn't seen it for, you know, 7 or 8 years, and there on the Christmas bird day count on the last Saturday, on the 20th of December, I'm sitting at my desk. I have my binoculars next to my desk. I'm looking out the window down to the creek, and there's another Wilson snipe.
It was great.
What are the odds?
We got the sound down, don't we?
Yes, we do.
Oh, it's so perfect. Here it is.
That's so cute.
Yeah, oftentimes you'll hear this before you'll see it, and you'll also be surprised because it flushes out if you're walking down toward the stream and it's in the stream. It'll take off, and it takes off like a pheasant takes off from a cornfield. I mean, it just bursts out. And so it's a cool bird. Not many are seen this time of year, but I was lucky to have one. And then the other lucky thing that happened during the bird count for me was I was complaining all day to Jean, my wife, that I hadn't seen the Carolina wrens that have been there every day for the last months at my house. And I wanted to report them because not everyone has Carolina wrens in Dane County. So I was literally typing out my list to send to Brenna over the Southern Wisconsin Bird Alliance that I hadn't seen the Carolina wrens. And then I went one more look outside, and there they were. So it was a very triumphant day for me with the Christmas bird count. So I hope people will have participated and enjoyed participating in the bird count as I did. It's a lot of fun. I might do it again next year. And one of these years, I'm not going to do the lazy man's approach to the bird count. I will actually go out in some territory and see what I can find.
And maybe I'll join you too, because you got me that book for Christmas, and maybe I'll have to join you. And by the way, funny story, my roommate, he was like, what do you got there? And I was holding the book when I got home, and he's like, oh, what do you got there? And I was like, I got a bird book. And then I put it down, and then a half an hour later, he was reading the bird book that you got me. And I was like, you got to be kidding me.
I'm telling you, I'm an evangelist.
You are.
I was going to say, I feel like I see a podcast episode or something in our future with the three of us where Matt teaches us about birding and you bring your book and we bring on State Representative Darren Madison, who is also a birder. I feel like that's a whole episode in and of itself.
Oh, yeah.
We got to get that going.
Experience levels.
Yeah, we'll do that. I'm looking forward to that. Mark from Prairie du Sac says he switched over that hot pepper suet that I've been telling people to use. Squirrels don't like it. The birds do. So that's enough of the bird talk. I could do it all day. I want to do a poem here. This is a classic. This is called Christmas Bells from Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. Written in the midst of the Civil War, actually written around Christmas, 1863. I'm just going to read a couple verses. I heard the bells on Christmas Day their old familiar carols play, and wild and sweet the words repeat of peace on earth, goodwill to men. But in despair I bowed my head. There is no peace on earth, I said, for hate is strong and mocks the song of peace on earth, goodwill to men. Then pealed the bells more loud and deep. God isn't dead, nor doth he sleep. The wrong shall fail. The right prevail with peace on earth, goodwill to men. Well, I sure hope the wrong shall fail and the left and the right prevail with goodwill to all. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. It's been great spending some time with you over the last few weeks while John and Gordy have been doing double duty. It's been great doing the show again with you, Angela, which I really appreciate.
Always. Thank you. I mean, I always appreciate every time you text me and said, hey, I got this time open. As long as I'm available, I'm always there.
God,
it's always a good show.
You answer the bell almost all the time, yeah. Got to thank our guest, Sam Liebert, of All Voting is Local, Wisconsin, Lisa Bernard of the Humane Society, Dane County, and Judge Everett Mitchell, who is a real treasure for our community here in Madison.
Yeah.
I want to thank all the callers and texters. I want to thank you, Dom. It's always great working with you, Dom.
I got to say, you know, we've had a couple of shows. We've had, man, we probably had 10 or 15 shows together at this point. So we're going strong.
There's
here.
A groove.
There's a groove.
There's a groove.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I always appreciate the opportunity that John and Gordy offer me, that Catherine Lake offers me, that Sage Weil offers me to use my voice to the extent that I still have one here on Civic Media. And I'm wishing everybody a real happy holiday. A Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. I had potato latkes with my son a couple days ago. They were tasty. And so I've got to make some steak for the boys on Christmas Day. And
there
I hope
I hope you,
if you're listening, have a great Christmas meal and share that holiday cheer with friends, which we're going to be doing as well. And I'm sure you are too, Angela.
Indeed. Indeed. Happy holidays and super excited to just start the new year too.
Yeah. Turn the page. Start anew.
Yes.
Have a fun one, everyone.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.